chapter 15, verse 1. There's 47 verses tonight, and I think we can squeeze them in. We'll see. See where he takes them. I don't know. I may not be able to. Chapter 15 of Mark, verse 1. And straightway in the morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council, and bound Jesus and carried him away and delivered him to Pilate. And Pilate asked him, Art thou the king of the Jews? And he answering said unto him, Thou sayest it. And the high priest accused him of many things, but he answered nothing. And Pilate asked him again, saying, Answerest thou nothing? Behold, how many things they witness against you. But Jesus answered nothing, so that Pilate marveled. Now at the feast he released unto them one prisoner, whomsoever they desired. And there was one named Barabbas, which was bound with them, that had made insurrection with him, who had committed murder in the insurrection. And the multitude, crying aloud, began to desire him to do as he had ever done unto them. But Pilate answered them, saying, Will you that I release unto you the king of the Jews? For he knew that the high priests had delivered him for envy. But the chief priests moved the people that he should rather release Barabbas unto them. And Pilate answered and said unto them, What will ye then that I do unto him whom ye call the king of the Jews? And they cried out again, Crucify him. Then Pilate said to them, Why? What evil has he done? And they cried out the more exceedingly, Crucify him. And so Pilate, willing to contend with the people, released Barabbas unto them and delivered Jesus when he had scourged him to be crucified. And the soldiers led him away into the hall called Praetorium. And they called together the whole band. And they clothed him with purple and plaited a crown of thorns and put it about his head and began to salute him, Hail, King of the Jews! And they smote him on the head with a reed and did spit upon him and bowing their knees worshipped him. And when they had mocked him, they took off the purple from him and put on his own clothes on him and led him out to crucify him. And they compelled one Simon, a Cyrene, who passed by coming out of the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to bear the cross. And they bring him unto the place Golgotha, which is being interpreted the place of the skull. And they gave to him wine mingled with myrrh, but he received it not. And when they had crucified him, they parted his garments, casting lots upon them what every man should take. And it was the third hour, and they crucified him. And the superscription of the accusation was written over the king of the Jews. And with him they crucified two thieves, the one on the right hand and the other on his left. And the scripture was fulfilled, which says that he was numbered among the transgressors. And they that passed by railed on him, wagging their heads and saying, Aha, thou that destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save thyself and come down from the cross. Likewise also the chief priests mocking said among themselves with the scribes, He saved others, himself he cannot save. Let Christ the King of Israel descend now from the cross, that we may see and believe. And they that were crucified with him reviled him. And when the sixth hour was come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. In the ninth hour Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, something like that, which is being interpreted, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And some of them that stood by when he had heard it said, Behold, he calls Elias. And one ran and filled a sponge full of vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him to drink, saying, Let alone, let us see whether Elias will come to take him down. And Jesus cried with a loud voice and gave up the ghost. And the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom. And when the centurion which stood over against him saw that he so cried out and gave up the ghost, he said, Truly, this man was the Son of God. There was also women looking on from afar off, among whom was Mary Magdalene, and Mary the mother of James the Less, and Joseph and Salome, who also when he was in Galilee followed him and ministered unto him, and many other women which came up with him unto Jerusalem. And now when the evening was come, because it was the preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, an honorable counselor, which also waited for the kingdom of God, came and went in boldly unto Pilate and craved the body of Jesus. And Pilate marveled if he were already dead, and calling unto him the centurion, he asked him whether he had been dead a while, or been any while dead. And when he knew it of the centurion, he gave the body to Joseph. And he bought fine linen, and took him down, and wrapped him in the linen, and laid him in a sepulcher which was hewn out of the rock, and rolled a stone into the door of the sepulcher. And Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of Joseph beheld where he was laid. Boy, there's a bunch of good stuff in here. We know we finished up in chapter 14, and we ended up with Peter crying, wailing aloud. We realized how big a mistake he made by denying the Christ. And immediately in the morning, the high priests held a consultation with the elders described in the whole council. This word literally, or council, is the word for Sanhedrin, the whole Sanhedrin. That wasn't all of the Jews or all the leadership. It was just the Sanhedrin, which was the elite group inside of the Jewish nation. They were the ones with the big cheeses that made all the shots, called the shots for everybody. And bound Jesus and carried him away and delivered him unto Pilate. They made the decision, it's time to go. Let's kill him. See? Religion's always the one that wants to kill you. They're very violent. Does anybody know what the word Pilate means? Means armed with a spear. See, it's violence. See, that's the worldly. The world's always ready to be at war. They're armed and ready to fight all the time. Jesus was a mute lamb going to the slaughter. He was not armed, was he? There's the difference between the sons of God and the worldly sons, because there's a difference of attitude in the mind. Fighting, not fighting. See, there's what our pattern is. And Pilate led him, or asked him, are you the king of the Jews? And he answered unto him, you say it. He said, you're even confessing it yourself. And the high priest accused him of many things, and that's the end of that verse right there. The rest of those words are all added words. But he answered nothing. Those are added words on there. And Pilate asked him again, saying, answerest thou nothing, or respond? Don't you respond to anything? Behold, how many things they not witness against you, but literally the language says they charge you with. Look how many things they're charging you with, and you're not answering. He knew his destiny, didn't he? How many times did he tell his disciples through his walk in those 3 years with him, 3.5 years, it's not yet my time. It's not yet my time. He knew where he was going, knew what time it was going to be. He knew he was the Passover lamb. He knew what time he was going in to be crucified. He knew that. And if we'll pay attention, you know what we'll know? We'll know exactly when our crucifixion takes place. And you won't go kicking and screaming. You'll know it's time to give it up. We'll touch on it here in a little bit. But Jesus answered nothing, so that Pilate marveled. Now at the feast he released unto them one prisoner, whomsoever they, what? Literally, ask it for. They got to choose who they got. He permitted them to choose who they wanted. And there was one called Barabbas. What's his name mean? It means son of shame or confusion. Okay, son of shame or confusion. And he committed a murder, it says. He was bound with them that had made the rebellion. Yes. Sure.
Does that mean the description of Pilate is the one with the sword or the spear?
Yeah.
And does that name apply before it was biblical? I mean,
yes.
It wasn't something to pick upon later.
No. Okay. It's what the names meant from the beginning in the language. It's not just a biblical meaning of the name, it's the language, the Greek language, where it meant. And language was there before this took place.
Because of the happening of the name took on the meaning.
No, it was already there. Okay. And he made an insurrection or a rebellion with them who had committed murder in the insurrection. When we are in the son of shame, we're going to be involved in rebellion and what? Murder. Now, do we think murder means putting a gun to somebody's head and shooting them? Taking a knife and stabbing somebody. Right there's the knife. See? Our tongues does more damage than guns and bullets and bombs. Mm-hmm. This thing right here cuts and destroys more people by words than to do with bullets. Okay? And the multitude went up and began to desire or to ask him to do just as he had always or regularly done for them. See, they wanted to say, give us what we want. And that's what babies do. What do babies do? Wah, give me what I want. Temper tantrum. See, they just want what they want, and they're not concerned with what's the better of, for everybody. So the immature people still in the worldly thinking people, even in the church people, and these were Jewish people, which are supposed to represent who? Church folk. See, religion, church folk. And all they're concerned with is getting what they want. And that's when Jesus went to the, after his crucifixion, he set down the pattern. It's not what I want, it's what he wants. Not my will, but his will be done. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Give us Saul. Mm-hmm. There's several parables in these last few chapters. Where am I at? Okay. I'm going into 9. But Pilate answered him, saying, "Will ye or do you desire that I release to you the King of the Jews?" Now, see, he made a point to ask him, "Do you want the king? You want your king?" And they're saying, "Nah, we don't want him. We want a natural king over us, just like you said with Saul a while ago." Because he knew that the high priest had delivered him for what reason? Literally, not for envy, but through jealousy. He was jealous. See, the high priest was a very prestigious place. In the Jewish faith, the man who stands in the high, as a high priest, even today in the Jewish faith, the high priest, who gets more respect than him? Nobody does. And here comes a man, the son of a carpenter, poor people, just common people out here, and his son walks out and starts speaking and the multitudes flock after him. Don't you reckon there's a little jealousy there? Hey, what are you doing? I'm the high priest. What are you getting the attention for? Don't you know the high priest is supposed to get it? He goes somewhere with that one. Well, how many preachers today you think are upset if someone comes up out of their congregation and starts performing closer to God than they are? What's the first thing that comes out of that preacher's mouth? You're being disrespectful. You're a rebel, see? Because you are saying something that God wanted said and you wouldn't say it. So somebody else comes along and says it, and then you get jealous because God's moving somebody else because you won't do your job. That's what religion's full of. They all think it's about them getting attention. It's not. It's a talking about everything going to the Father. Even Jesus said, "Don't worship me," didn't he? He said, "Give it to the Father." And the church is trying to get it all to the man. Okay? A little tight there. Okay, where am I at? 10, 11. But the chief priest, or the high priest, okay, moved the people or excited the people in order that they should release Barabbas and them. So see, it wasn't the people, but it was the high priest that stirred them up and told them what to do. Isn't that religion today? Religion stirs people up and gets them to do things that they really don't want to do. Why? Because they tell them, "I'm the one that's got to hook up with God, and if you don't listen to me, I'll get you in trouble. See? You do what I tell you, you'll be in trouble." That's not what this book says. This book does not say, go to a preacher and let the preacher live your life for you. It's supposed to be you and God having a relationship, not the preacher having a relationship and coming telling you about what God said. I'm trying to help you understand where you hear God yourself. You have that relationship. I can get in enough trouble by myself. I can't live 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 people's lives, or 10 or 15 or 20. I can get in all the trouble I need in my own life. See? So if I can just get my life in order, I'm doing good. The same with everybody else. I don't want to try to live everybody else's lives. I want to help you live your own life. It's like these, you see these people in the circus, they got a drum, a harmonica, a banjo, or a mandolin, got and the cymbals between their knees, and they're playing the whole band by themselves, you know. That don't work, does it? They make a lot of noise, but it really isn't very good, is it? And see, that's what churches are doing. It's about one man being in control and trying to do everything. Had a man come to me one time and said this, God has told me that you are a man who has proved yourself to God and man in your finances. He said, now I want you to lay hands on me so I can do what you're doing. What do you think I did? Huh? I just turned around and walked away. He said, you hear me? I said, yeah, I heard you. You didn't hear God. See? Because God gave me a gift, who's expect to use it? Okay? If God gives you a gift, what right would I have come to you, Cindy, and say, you've got a gift of this or that, Cindy, touch me so I can do it. What I'm telling you is you're not important, isn't it? I just want your gift. Heck with you. See, if God gives you a gift, you should be operating in that gift, not me. If you have something God give you, then it's yours. Not mine, is it? So you should be functioning in that gift. So this is what religion does. It excites people into doing stupid things. They think with their head, not with their or with their heart, not with their head. They don't get it together right, okay? Where are we at now? 12. And Pilate responded and said again to them, what do you desire that I shall do to whom you call the King of the Jews? And they cried out, what? Literally it says, cried out repeatedly. Crucify him, crucify him, crucify him. They just kept it up. It wasn't just like I said, crucify him, and that was the end of it. They started just repeatedly saying, chanting, crucify him, crucify him, crucify him, until Pilate couldn't do anything but appease them. He didn't want to take the pressure. Then Pilate said unto them, or to them, what evil? Why? What evil has he done? And they cried out the more exceedingly, crucify him, over and over and over again. What's he done? They don't care what he's done, kill him anyway. Well, what church has always taught, everyone sins, so he had to sin, so I guess he deserved to die. See? Religion has those things, right? That's what Bob said, wasn't it? Not this Bob. Huh? Yeah, your head does it to you. Yeah, you better believe it does. Okay. And verse 15. And Pilate, desiring to satisfy the people, there's his heart, see? To satisfy the people. A true leader does not try to satisfy people. A true leader or man of God set in a position does not try to satisfy people. Who's he trying to satisfy? I don't try to satisfy people here. I try to satisfy my Father, and you'll get what you're supposed to have whether you like it or not. That's what it's supposed to be. It's not. This isn't a smorgasbord that you come in and choose what you want to choose out of God's Word that I believe and not believe what I don't like. It's like me not liking onions, okay? But if God sticks an onion in my mouth, I'm going to have to eat it. Thank God he don't do that. But as far as the Word goes, I don't have a choice to go in like a big smorgasbord and eat what I want and not eat what I don't want. I have to take whatever God sets my table, that's what I've got to eat. And if he lays it out there, and believe me, many times he's upset my cart. Many times. It's a little harder to upset it now because it's been upset so many times now, I just know when he's coming around to shake things, it's time something's going to change. It's okay. Jump out of the cart, turn it over, and I'll sit on the bottom side and spin the wheels and play with them or something, you know. But because it just don't work anymore, me trying to do it myself. And getting upset don't change anything. But he was willing to satisfy the people, or desiring to satisfy the people, released Barabbas to them, and delivered Jesus when he had scourged him to be crucified. And the soldiers led him away into the hall called Praetorium. You know what that means? The word Praetorium? Huh? It literally means headquarters. It literally means headquarters. So they took him to headquarters, to the army headquarters. And said they called together the whole band, or literally the whole detachment of soldiers. Everybody who was in that detachment there, they called together. And they clothed him with purple and plaited a crown of thorns and put it about his head. We're starting a parable here. This is what religion does. Look what they do. They clothed him with purple. What does purple represent? Royalty, kingdom, kingship, see? They put the royalty on him. Now watch. They put it on him. And they plaited or they braided a crown of thorns. What do thorns represent? Curses. Go back to Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, 16. You'll find out that the land was cursed and brought forth briars and thorns and briars. Okay? Symbolism. So they plaited or braided this crown of thorns and put it about his what? Now, look here. They put the royalty on him. Didn't say it came from God. It came from these Roman soldiers. They took a crown of curses and placed it upon his what? They were cursing the mind of Christ. They were mocking and cursing the mind of Christ. That's what they were doing in symbolism. They were putting that curse of thorns upon his head. They were trying to curse the mind of Christ. And they're still trying to do it today. They still try to crucify you today because of the truth. And it said they began to salute him, "Hail, King of the Jews." And they smote him on the head. The language says they beat him repeatedly on the head with a reed and did spit upon him and bowing their knees worshipped him. And when they had what? There's what religion does to the truth. They mock it. Jesus said, "I am what? The truth. I am the truth." And all they're going to do is mock the truth. So they took off the purple him. What did they do? Why do you think religion today hires their preachers? If they hire them, they can fire them. They put the royalty on you, they can take it off. If you let God exalt you, no one can abase you. You see what I'm saying? You can't let somebody hire you to do something. If I work for God, I have to work for God. And that's not being arrogant or independent. It's just the truth. If you work for somebody, who do you work for? That person. I couldn't come in and tell you how to do your job when you're working for somebody else, could I? Lois works at the hospital. If I went over and told them people, "Hey, don't do your job that way. I want to rearrange this office. Y'all move out and do this." Well, they'd say, "I'm nuts." They wouldn't listen to me. Huh?
You still have to be benevolent.
Yeah.
You can go the other way. You know, that's how false it comes. Because they have leadership that's not benevolent.
Okay. Well, I'm not trying to do anything in my way.
You need to check the balance. Well, it can only come from God.
That's right. That's where it has to come from. Yeah. If God sets me, God can uproot me anytime he wants to. And he's the only one that can. I don't have to worry about that. I don't have to worry about where my authority come from because no person gave it to me. God placed it with me, so I don't have to worry about it. And if he takes it, it's gone anyway. And I know better than that, so I'm not even concerned with it.
Well, you've got a responsibility to be able to prove everything yourself.
Absolutely, and I enjoy that. I enjoy it. But they took the purple off from him and put his clothes back on him and led him out to be crucified. And they compelled one Simon, a Cyrenian, who passed by coming out of the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to bear his cross. Simon means here with the intent to what? Obey. A Cyrenian. That word Cyrenian means supremacy of the bridle out of Africa, an aboriginal person. He was probably a slave, a black slave. Okay? who passed by out of the country, the father of Alexander. Alexander means what? Man defender, or defendant of humanity, defender of humanity. And Rufus, which means red, who's speaking of who? Adam. See? To bear the cross. Who bared the cross? See? Adam was the first Christ, the type of Christ. It says Jesus was the last Adam. And who carried his cross? The first Adam. The first Adam carried it. See? I know that makes people go up in the air sometimes, but that's what his name represents. And when it says cross, it was not this two-membered beam that we see that everybody hangs around their neck or on top of their churches or on their doors or on their mirrors of their cars. It wasn't that. The Greek word is staru. It means a stake or a post. It's 4717 in the Vine's dictionary. It means to fasten to a stake or a pail upright. The Thayer says an upright pointed stake. Just like that.
Is that in Strong's?
4717, yes. It's in Strong's and Vine's both. Same number. They work on the same system. Same numbering system. In verse 22 it says, and they brought him to a place called what? Golgotha. What does that mean?
Calvary.
Place of the skull. See? Now they took him up on this place to kill him, and it's the place of the skull. What's a skull represent? Death, the mind, death to the mind. See, they're trying to kill this mind. And they think by killing this flesh body, they can stop this mind, can they? See, the mind is eternal. It's the Spirit of God. They can't stop it. Every time they persecute the true Christianity, it just gets stronger. That's all. Huh? Try to fan a fire out and you just spread it all over the place. Okay? But they took him to this place called the place of the skull, trying to do in his mind again. And they gave to him to drink wine mingled with myrrh, literally as a narcotic, as a painkiller. They just have a little mercy for him there a little bit maybe. But he received it not. And when they crucified him, they parted his garments, casting lots upon them, literally they were casting like dice. To figure out what every man should take, what part of his garment. Because he was not a pauper, contrary to everybody's belief. He had a garment that was made out of one single strand of thread. The whole thing was woven with no seams. That was something that royalty wore. Only royalty wore that. Huh? His myrrh, this word myrrh and the wine mingled with myrrh, it was as a narcotic. The language says it was as a narcotic, as a painkiller. That's what they were giving it to him, being a little easier for him to bear during his torture. Probably the reason they gave it to him wasn't necessarily for mercy, but they gave it to him to prolong his life, to torture him more. Didn't they? At his birth and his death. And when they had crucified him, they parted his garments. Well, this one piece that they really wanted, the outer garment, was one piece. That was the one of real value. And if they cut it in two, it wouldn't be worth anything. It'd just be a regular piece of cloth then. They wanted that one outer robe was the one that they really wanted. But they parted everything he had. And it was what hour and they crucified him? How about that? Remember what I said earlier about you're going to figure out when your crucifixion is? What's the third represent? Huh? Represents the third realm, the third feast. See? When you come to maturity, tabernacles, third day, what's it speak of? Maturity, growing up. See? So when you grow up into maturity, and he was a mature son, he come to his peak, didn't he? Right where God wanted him, to his fullness of maturity, and now it was time to die. See? That doesn't mean that we are going to die when we come to maturity. It means it's time to give up ourselves for the rest of humanity. That's all. See, because he says in Romans 12:1-2, I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present yourself a living sacrifice. He don't want you to die. God's going to raise you to maturity so he can use you, not to slay you physically and throw you in the ground. That's not what he's after. But he wants you to willingly give up your life, just like Jesus said, no man takes my life, but I lay it down willingly. See? But the reason I lay it down is I know I can take it back up. See, how many people believe they can take their life back up? See? If you know what he says, you can do it. See? But you've got to come to a place where you believe it. And the inscription of the accusation was written over the king of the Jews. And with him they crucified two thieves, the one on his right hand and the other on his left. Now, the word here for thieves is lestes, 3027 in the Strong's Dictionary. And it's not the same as in Luke 23:32, where he says there was two robbers, and there was two robbers there. Here's two thieves. That word there is kakorgos, and it's number 2557. There was two thieves and two robbers, and one in the middle. What would that make it? How many was crucified there? At least five. I don't want to go off into that other rabbit trail, but there's a truth there, that there was more than three crucified that day. Okay? And the scripture was fulfilled, which says that he was numbered with the what? With the transgressors. Where did he quote that from? Where did Mark quote that from? Isaiah 53:12. He was numbered among the transgressors. Isaiah 53:12. You can go there and look later. I'm not going to read it now because you don't need to. You can go look at it. So this is the prophecy being fulfilled right here, isn't it? And they that passed by railed or reviled on him, wagging their heads and saying, Aha! The one that destroyed the temple and built it in 3 days. Now, the temple right there. What temple is that? The word is naos. Now, everybody teaches that he was talking about when he showed the disciples, that they said, look at the big temple we built out here. Look how great it is. He said, destroy that temple and I'll build it again. He said, destroy this temple and in 3 days I'll build it again. They were talking about a literal temple, and I've heard many people preach that that's what happened right here. Now, these guys didn't say it the way that people teach it. And they says, the one that destroys the temple. And that was the word Hieron, that's what they teach it, the literal temple. This word is naos, the spiritual temple, this thing right here. Destroy the temple, this temple, and build it in 3 days, and it says, save thyself and come down from the cross. Now, he was talking about building this temple in 3 days. What's he talking about? Three realms. Passover, Pentecost, Tabernacles. In my third realm, when I come to there, I'm going to rebuild my temple. That's Jesus came into the third day. He did what? Resurrected on the third day? He took his life back up on the third day, didn't he? See, when I come to that place, I can lay my life down, but I can pick it back up. Why? Because I've come to maturity and know who I am and know what authority we walk in. I can lay my life down. You can crucify me if you want to, but I'll raise my life back up. You can crucify me, but the only reason you're going to crucify me is because I lay myself out there. I'm not going to fight you. Do you hear me? That's what you've got to know in yourself. I don't have to fight nobody. They can do what they want to do to me, because they can't do anything if it wasn't in my Father's will for them to do it. When I fight somebody, all I'm doing is saying, I'm stronger than you and I don't need God. I'm just going to lay down and let them do what they want. I don't care. Where am I at? Help me. 31. Verse 30 there, where he says, save yourself and come down from the cross. The word is sozo, 4982 in the Greek, in the Strong's. It means deliver. Deliver yourself and come down from the cross. Likewise also, the chief priests mocking said among themselves with the scribes, he delivered others, himself he cannot deliver. That's what the language says. Let King Christ, the King of Israel, descend now from the cross, in order that we may see and believe. You know what the Hebrews says? Scripture says this. He that does not see and yet believes is blessed. Okay. What does it say in Hebrews 11? Faith is what? Hebrews 11:1. Turn there, read it. Hebrews 11:1. Hold your place here. Turn to Hebrews 11:1. Now faith is what? The substance or essence of things hoped for, the evidence or proof of things not seen. Now let me read it to you in the language the way it should read. Now faith is the essence hoped for and the proof of an accomplished fact. That's what it should say. It's a proof of an accomplished fact. I believe God has a finished work. That's the accomplished fact. That's faith. When I believe that God has it, I don't have to see anything. God said. God has proved himself to me. I don't have to worry about God lying. He's proved it. He's never lied to me. So whatever God says, anything, I believe him. See, that's faith. Just believe what God said. Okay? Let's go back over to Mark 15 again. Where are we at? 32. Okay. In order that we may see and believe. See? If I see, there's no faith. If I look in here and say, I see Phil sitting in a chair back there, I don't have to have faith that Phil's there. I see him. Right? Do I need faith to say I see Bob sitting over there? Because he's there. I can see him. There's no faith in that. But if God said he's already done the work, and I don't see it done yet, does that mean it's not done? No.
The Amplified says faith is not revealed to the senses.
It's not. It's revealed to the spirit.
Yeah, right.
It does not rely on senses, the five natural senses, or are my emotions in any way. It's just my spirit knows the truth. That's all. Amplified says that well. Okay? And they that were what? Crucified, or literally, say it again. Thayer's has something in there about the staro, so I won't get into all that, the staro. But they that were crucified with him reviled him. And when the sixth hour was come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. You know there's a whole bunch of something in that little verse? Can anybody tell me about that little verse?
Which one are you on? 26?
No. 33?
No.
Okay. In the sixth hour was come, there was darkness over the whole until the ninth. Well, there's a lot of things in there that was coming to a totality of fullness there, but there's something else. In the sixth hour, what number six mean? Okay, in humanity, look here. In the sixth hour, in the time of humanity, there was what over the whole earth? Darkness. As long as man is in control, he's continually evil. Darkness, ignorance, wickedness. Until the ninth hour, what's the number nine? It's the gift. And in the ninth hour, there was a gift. Do you hear me? What was the gift? He died. Oh my God, it's terrible. Yeah, but it was the greatest thing that ever happened. There was the gift. He died. And you hear people stand around and cry and slobber, oh, he died. It was a gift. My God, you ought to rejoice in that. That's the gift he's telling you he gave you. From the sixth hour to the ninth hour, there's the gift to humanity. Now we're free. Until that point, humanity was not free. And right there, we got free. Whom the man, is, the Son of Man is set, is, was, whom the Son has set free is free indeed. John 8. Okay? Oh, gee, that's good. Oh, I like that. And in the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which is being interpreted, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And that's not what it says. How about that? It says something. There's only one word. Now, there's one word here. It says, my God, why? The word why is not why, it's two words. It's eistis. Eis is to or into, and tis is what? Now read it again. My God, being interpreted, my God, to what hast thou forsaken me? That mean anything different to you? Into what have you forsaken me? He was actually feeling his forsaking there. It wasn't just like you left me, he said, what have you left me in? My God, what have you left me in? If God separated from you, what would you be in?
Yeah. Abandoned, it wouldn't be doubt.
No, you'd know where you're at. Sure. He was like, Father, why'd you give up on me? He didn't give up on me. He just saying, my God, where'd you put me? See, into what did you put me? He put you into humanity. There's the hell. Oh, my God. Yeah, dregs of the earth. Okay. And some of them that stood by when they heard it said, behold, he calls for Elijah. Literally, it says Elijah, not Elias. And that's typical. People that stand around and hear spiritual people speak usually misquote what they say. Don't they? Come on. I mean, now, if a person is not spiritual, but they're listening with an intellectual ear, when they hear something spiritual spoken, it sounds like blah, 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 blah. They don't understand, so they just say, well, it sounds like that to me. Isn't that true? When you're talking spiritual things, you're talking in a tongue that they do not understand. That makes sense to you? So when we can use the same words, say the same words they use, but they don't understand what we're saying, because their understanding of that word is not what our understanding is. We understand it by spirit. They understand it by this gray matter up here. Two different understandings. You got to get on the same page. How can two walk together except to be agreed in spirit? See? Okay? So we got to know that's typical of non-spiritual people. They don't hear right. They hear what their mind tells them. And one ran and filled a sponge with vinegar and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink, saying, let him alone. Let's see if Elijah will appear and take him down. And Jesus cried with a loud voice and expired, what the language says. He expired. He died. Next verse. And the veil of the temple was rent in twain or in two from the top to the bottom. And you hear people preach and say, the veil in the natural temple was rent from the top to the bottom. That word, the temple, is naos again. It's not talking about a literal temple. That's Hieron. This is naos. And his temple was rent. His veil was rent. What was his veil? His flesh. See? And my fleshly thinking and your fleshly thinking was rent at the very same time that he died. Now I have a right. I can boldly, it says in Hebrews, walk into the throne room by the blood of Christ. I can enter in. That ought to make you just plumb shout and kick the walls out. I don't have any fear any longer. See, the church has got you scared of your Father. There's no reason to be scared of our Father. He doesn't hate us. He's not mad. He doesn't want to punish us. He loves us. Just like I read that little joke thing before we started. The church tells us God's going to do all these bad things. And he said, well, I wasn't supposed to tell you that part of the good news yet. Yeah. Huh? What part of the good news is somebody burning in hell for eternity? See? I can't get that part of it. I can't find love. I can't find anywhere that this punishment is love. Can't find it. Okay. Verse 39, when the centurion which stood opposite him saw that he so cried out and expired, he said, truly this man was the Son of God. And see, there's the ignorance of, even though they recognized something, they spoke in ignorance. He said he was the Son of God, like he wasn't no more. He still didn't know about the spiritual truth yet. That's where the world said, well, he was the Son of God, but he died. they missed something here. It's not over yet, is it? It's not quite over yet. There was also women looking on afar off, among whom was Mary Magdalene, Mary of Magdala, Mary the mother of Jacob, the less, and of Joseph, and of Salome, which means peaceful, who also, when he was in Galilee, followed him and ministered to him, and many other women, which are the ones that came up with him to Jerusalem. Now notice what he was talking about, how many women he was talking about. Now you know the church world says women can't preach, women can't do this, women can't do that. They were ministering, and they want to say that ministering here is just doing menial little tasks like washing their clothes and cooking their food and washing their feet and combing their hair. And give me a break. Give me a break. In Acts it said there was a man who had seven daughters who were prophetesses. Okay? They call them prophetesses, but you know, they wouldn't say they were prophets, because prophet doesn't have a sex. A prophet is an inspired speaker, whether it's male or female. They put the prophetess in there to make them like they were less than what the men are. It's nothing to do with the man being superior to the woman in the natural. God is no respecter of persons. How could he make two-thirds of his creation, because there's about 2-to-1 in men and women, how could he make two-thirds of his creation less than what his one-third is? Come on, something's not right, is it? He's not mad at women. If God was mad at anybody, it should be the ignorant men thinking they're superior. Wouldn't you think? See, if he had something to be mad about, it'd be the ignorant men running around thinking they're superior to all the women. Watch where you put yourself. Call them as I see them, boys. Okay. Verse 42. And now when it was evening was come, because it was the preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, Arimathea is a place of heights, an honorable counselor, a member of the Sanhedrin, which also waited for the kingdom of God, came and went in and entered in boldly unto Pilate, you know, armed with a spear, and craved, or literally asked, for the body of Jesus. Now look, it said he was a honorable counselor, or a member of the Sanhedrin. He was a Jew, the Jew of Jews, you know. But he was still looking for the kingdom to appear. They didn't hear Jesus' words when he walked on this earth. In Luke 17, verse 20 and 21, the Pharisees was questioning Jesus, when will the kingdom appear? And he said, lo, the kingdom of God is within you. He was talking to the Pharisees. Well, they weren't the good guys now. It was already within them. I can't help, Scripture tells me that God, when he created first fruit in Genesis chapter 1, the first three verses, from that point on, he said to the first fruit in 1 and 26, let's make man in our image, so y'all go and get ready to do what I want you to do. And first fruit went over in Genesis 2, 7, and created Adam out of the dust of the earth. They formed a dirt body and breathed the breath of life in, and the Yahweh Elohim is the one that breathed the life in there. So we created God and man together. Does that make sense? So now we've got Yahweh Elohim inside of this dirt body. The sons of God inside these dirt bodies. Now, there's where life began. They became a living soul, didn't they? Now, does it ever say anywhere in this book where God took the soul out of humanity? Somebody show me where he took the soul out and split the soul and the spirit. Does it show it anywhere? You know what? The day you were born, God was in you. The very moment of conception, God was inside of you. When you were just that little wiggly thing in that egg, God was inside of that. Okay? And man tries to say, you got to ask somebody to come and take care of your life. Forgive me. God was placed in humanity from the beginning when Adam was created. That very same verse, that he was formed, the life was placed within him. And if it ever was taken away, humanity would cease to exist. There would be no more humanity. If God didn't want humanity, it wouldn't be here. I can tell you that right now. Okay. Verse 44, and Pilate marveled that he were already dead, and called to him the centurion and asked if he had been dead for a while. And when he knew it, the centurion, he gave the body to Joseph. And he brought fine linen and took him down and wrapped him in linen. What's the linen? Righteousness. See? Linen represents the righteousness. See, now, who just died here? Tell me who just died. Jesus the man. Jesus of Nazareth is the one who died. See? Not Christ, not the Spirit, but Jesus the flesh man just died. The book said he was the last Adam. Now listen to what it just said. Remember earlier, the man Rufus went up, who was he? And that was the one who was carrying the cross. You know, Simon, it was the family of that. But he was a descendant of Adam, right? And Adam was carrying the cross. And when he got up there, see, the spiritual man didn't die, but the natural man carried the cross up and then got crucified, did he not? Because the natural man died here, not the spirit man.
Who was the Messiah then, the natural man or the spirit man?
Spirit man. Natural man was done away with. We can get that over in the next chapter. We'll get into a little bit more of that being out of the way. But we'll get that in the next chapter. Okay? But he wrapped him in fine linen. That was God saying, come on home, son. Humanity, I've just placed you back where you went. In the Garden of Eden, we were in the righteousness of God, what they call the Shekinah glory. He was naked, and they didn't even know about it, right? Because they were covered with God's righteousness. And then when they made their little boo-boo, right? When Adam did his thing, Eve done her thing, right? And it wasn't talking to a snake or eating an apple. When they were doing their thing, when they sinned and fell from the grace of God and God placed them outside the garden, right here, he wrapped them in linen cloth and restored them right back to where they were from the beginning in the presence of God, back into the Garden of Eden. That's not one man. That's humanity. Humanity died on that cross, and humanity was set right back in the same position it was in the Garden of Eden. And the only reason people aren't walking that way today is because the church ain't got enough guts to tell them that. Flat simple, that's what it is. They ain't got enough guts to tell you, you're the Son of God and God lives within you, now walk like a son. Sure he did. But I'm saying, people can't tell you the truth. The church is afraid to tell you the truth. They're afraid you'll leave. Well, if me telling you the truth will make you leave, I'll go open the door if you'll listen to me. Because then you're going to go out and tell somebody else, and that's the whole purpose. I'll open the door for you. Bless you as you go. If you hear what I'm saying. We were talking last night with Elwin and Margit. I said, for years, I'd pay somebody to listen to me. Because I know what I'm speaking is life. If they would listen, not just with their ears, with their spirit, I would pay them to sit still and listen to me. And we kind of joked because there have been a few places we went we had to. We traveled and didn't even get enough to come anywhere near expenses. So I guess we really was paying them to sit and listen. It's a joke. It's okay. Okay. And they laid him in a sepulcher which was hewn out of what? Out of a rock. You know what? He was cut out of the big rock, the mountain, God. And he was put right back in where he came out of. Same place. He came out of a garden, was buried right back in a garden. That neat? Just made a circle. Like the 23rd Psalm, he said, he restoreth my soul. Take that circular path and come right back to where you started. That's all he did. He took him on a course and brought him right back. And rolled a stone to the door of the sepulcher. And Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, beheld where he was laying. Isn't that amazing? There's so much stuff in there. I get so excited, I go and preach the rest of the book tonight, but I won't do it. I'll save that for next week. I don't want to push it too much. Most people probably wouldn't be preaching 2 weeks from now. I could preach Sunday. I was ready. I was lit.